He eyed me disdainfully. Yes, a calculated show of force, something to make them more afraid of their captains than they are of Venus.
What are you going to do? Marguerite asked, genuine fear in her voice.
Fuchs made a grisly smile for her.
Something aggressive, I imagine. They'll understand that. They'll get my message.
What do you mean?
You'll see.
Then, as if he'd made his decision and didn't have to worry about it anymore, he pressed his hands flat on the desktop and pushed himself up out of the chair.
I should be on the bridge. You two, attend to your duties.
I'm off watch, sir, I said.
Yes, but you're the closest thing we have to a planetary scientist here. We'll be poking out below the clouds soon. Get to the observation station up in the nose and make certain all the sensors are recording properly.
The first thing that flashed through my mind was that I had done my 8-hour stint on the bridge. He had no right to ask me to pull double duty. Almost instantly, I remembered that he was the captain, and there were no courts of appeal here. Yes, sir, I said, getting to my feet. Marguerite got up, too.
I'll go with you, she said. I wouldn't miss this moment for the world.
The view through the observation port up forward was still nothing but blank yellowish-gray clouds. Fuchs's so-called observation center was little more than a jumble of sensing instruments packed in around a bank of thick viewing ports. The ports themselves had been shuttered when Marguerite and I first got there. Heat shields, of course. It had taken me several minutes to figure out how to raise them.
It's warm up here, Marguerite said.
Her face glistened with a sheen of perspiration. Not only here, I replied. The deeper we go, the hotter it gets. She touched the thick port with her extended fingertips, then jerked them back quickly. Hot, eh? I asked needlessly. You can't run coolant through the ports, it would ruin their transparency. I pulled up the schematic of the ship's cooling system on the computer terminal built into the bulkhead below the ports. Coolant was piped through the entire hull and carried back to the heat exchangers for recycling. The heat exchangers dumped the accumulated high-temperature fluid into the engines that controlled our flight. The heat of the Venusian atmosphere was helping to drive Lucifer's steering engines. We had built the same type of system into Hesperus, naturally. It not only cooled the ship, but helped run the engines. Still, it was getting hotter. I felt sweat trickling along my ribs, felt my coveralls sticking to my damp skin. Marguerite gave a nervous little laugh.
At least it's a dry heat. The humidity outside must be zero.
I glanced at the sensor displays. The air temperature on the other side of our ports was climbing far past 100 degrees Celsius, and we were still more than 30 kilometers above the surface. Sure enough, there wasn't enough water vapor in the atmosphere to measure. For all practical purposes, the humidity out there was zero.
He said we'd be breaking out of the clouds, Marguerite murmured,
staring out into the endless yellow-gray haze.
Yes, but there's no way of knowing how—
Did you see that?
Marguerite cried. For just the flash of an instant, the clouds had thinned enough to see what appeared to be solid ground far, far below us. But then the mist had closed in again. We must be close, I said. Then the clouds broke, and we were beneath them. Marguerite and I stared down at the distant landscape of barren rock. It was utterly desolate. Nothing but bare, hard, stony ground as far as the eye could see. Naked rock in shades of gray and darker gray, with faint streaks here and there of lighter stuff, almost like talc or pumice.
We're the first people ever to see the surface of Venus,
Marguerite said, her voice low, breathless. There have been radar pictures, I said, and photos from probes.
But we're the first to see it with our own eyes, she said.
I had to agree.
Are all the instruments working? She asked.
I swiftly scanned their displays. All recording. She stared down at the scene of bleak devastation as if unable to pull her eyes away. The ground down there looked hot, baked for eons, blasted by temperatures hotter than any oven.
We'll be passing into the night side soon,
Marguerite said, more to herself than me. I was starting to recognize geological formations on the surface. I saw a series of domes and the wrinkles of a pressure-deformed region. There seemed to be mountains out near the horizon, although that might have been a distortion caused by the density of the thick atmosphere, like trying to judge shapes deep underwater. "Look," I pointed, "a crater."
"It must be 50 kilometers across," Marguerite said.
"It looks new," I said.
"Do you think it is? Pull up the map program and check it."
I did, and the display screen on the bulkhead showed the same crater on the radar map. "There's not much erosion going on down there," I remembered. "That crater will still look new 100 million years from now." Marguerite looked dubious.
"In all that heat and that corrosive atmosphere?"
"There's chemical weathering of the rock, but it goes very slowly," I told her. "And the heat is steady, constant. There's no hot, then cold cycle to make the rocks expand and contract. That's what erodes rocks on Earth, that and water. It just doesn't happen on Venus." Nodding, she asked,
"Are the telescopes recording all this?"
For the 10th time, I checked the instruments and the computer that monitored the sensors. They were all toiling away faithfully, recording every bit and byte of data. Optical, infrared, gravimetric. Even the neutron scattering spectrometer was running, although we were much too high above the ground for it to capture anything. We stayed there for hours, watching the landscape unfold beneath our straining eyes. When Lucifer drifted across the Terminator and into the night-shadowed side of Venus, we could still see the ground perfectly well. It glowed, red-hot. "It's like looking down into hell," I muttered. Marguerite said softly,
"But there aren't any doomed souls to see."
"Yes, there are," I heard myself answer. "We're the doomed souls. We'll be lucky to get out of here. It might take a miracle to save us." We stayed in the observation center for almost exactly 8 hours. As the time drew to a close, the ship's intercom blared in its computer-generated voice, "All third watch personnel report to your duty stations in 15 minutes. I realized that I was ravenously hungry. Still, Marguerite and I left those viewing ports reluctantly, as if we were afraid to miss something, despite the fact that we knew there was nothing to see down there but more heat-blasted bare rock, except for the wreckage of a spacecraft. We were too high to see the wreckage of Phosphorus with our naked eyes, but I was hoping the telescopes and their electronic boosters would pick it up. Then I realized that we might also find what was left of Hesperus. Maybe even Rodriguez's space-suited body was waiting for us somewhere down among those glowering rocks. We stopped at the galley for a quick snack, then I headed up toward the bridge and dropped Marguerite off at her quarters.
"I'm still hoping to find something biologically interesting down at this altitude," she told me, "although I doubt that anything could live in such heat."
I had to grin. "Your last biological discovery nearly killed us." She didn't see it as funny. Her face fell, and I mentally kicked myself for reminding her of her mother's death. Fuchs was not on the bridge when I reported for duty, but he showed up shortly afterward, looking grim. I wondered what he was planning as his calculated show of force. I remembered how he had punched me, and wondered if the violence he had spoken of would be something of the same. All through my 8-hour stint, the bridge was quiet and tense. Lucifer was cruising lower and lower as we sailed around the night side of the planet, scanning the surface below with all our sensors, including the radars. We knew Alex's last reported position. He was drifting along the equator when his beacon stopped transmitting. The last word he had transmitted was that his ship was breaking up and the crew was getting into their escape pod. We calculated that he must have gone down somewhere near the equator, or close enough to it so that our sensors could spot his wreckage as we sailed purposively around Venus's middle. The man at the life support console was one of the leaders we had seen conspiring in the crew's quarters, a sizable Asian named Bahadur. He was a full head taller than me, with broad shoulders and long, well-muscled arms. He kept his head shaved, but a thick, dark beard covered his jaw. His skin was sallow, almost sickly-looking, and his eyes gave the impression that he was thinking secret thoughts. Fuchs spoke hardly a word to any of us during the watch. But when we were replaced by the next shift, he stepped out into the passageway after us.
"Humphreys," he called out, "follow me."
Almost as an afterthought, he added, "You too, Bahadur." He marched us to the sickbay and told Bahadur to stand by the table. There wasn't enough room in the bay's narrow confines for the three of us, so I stayed out in the passageway by the open hatch.
"Bahadur, you look unhappy,"
Fuchs said in English.